This is Bristol, and you are listening to a podcast from the Bristol Confringe reading series.
Is everybody all suitably replenished and beard up and weed and whatever? Yeah? Okay. Well, welcome back to the Fringe. And I would like to welcome the mysterious cowboy Stark Holborn, who is going to come to the mic, and she's going to be reading from Some of Nunslinger, which is awesome. A round of applause, please, for Stark.
Thanks, Joe. I have a bit of a request. So is anyone feeling brave and would like a shot of whiskey? I would like to do some audience participation, reading a couple of lines. Oh, go on then. Okay. Oh, shot of whiskey. Question number one. Would you like to be the kindly bartender or the grizzled varmint? Grizzled varmint it is. Now I need a sort of kindly gruff bartender. Anyone? I'm going to force someone into it. The bartender could do it. There's a shot of whiskey riding on it. You don't have to drink the whiskey. You could probably leave that to me and I'll drink it later. But anyone? There we go. There is. You get to drink and just whatever you feel like. You don't actually have to stand up. You can do it from where you're sitting and pretend you're heckling me if you like. That's always useful as well. Is this loud enough? Can everyone hear now? I'll try to speak up and everything. This is actually set in a bar, this bit I'm going to read, which I thought was probably apt. It is also a deleted scene, so it doesn't appear anywhere in the book, which is this big thing. This is a Blu-ray, yeah. It's the added extras. It's just quite a fun scene, and I like reading it occasionally because it never made it into the book, but, you know, here's the opportunity. The saloon had grown quieter, for it was long past closing. The player piano dropped sporadic notes into the air, as if half asleep. The steady drip, drip of spilt liquor from the bar spoke of a night well spent, depending on whether you still possessed all of your teeth. A group of men sagged around a table, a bottle passing between them. Since one of them wore a bartender's apron, they were not like to be ejected any time soon. A grizzled pack, to be sure. Not one of them, even the youngest, who could not have been more than 18, without a scar. Their attention had shifted away from the bottle to a man seated in the corner. His eyes were black as the mahogany mantle.
"Eight now,"
came the general cry from around the table.
"Tell you, sir, did the California simply get a lot of
the man in the corner grinned, an invisible cigar between his teeth. "Why, you know all my tales." He reached for the bottle and missed, to a great deal of laughter, before pulling it towards him. One of the company was idly cross-hatching the table with a battered knife. Abe's eyes followed the blade's progress. "There is one y'all might not have heard true," he said slowly. "The time I escaped the firing squad at Fort Laramie."
"Hell, I always wondered at that,"
drawled the bartender.
"Heard you done problem there with your shackles."
"That weren't then." Muir seemed reluctant to speak, hand working unconsciously at his shoulder. "Do not go mouthing this tale to one and all, you hear. I ain't yet free of its trouble." He poured a dose of liquor, drank it straight down. Poured another. "Any of you boys ever had occasion to travel with a nun?" Ignoring the hoots and hollers, Muir drained his glass. "Damn troublesome company they are, and this one nearly got me killed. But God strike me down if she did not save my life that day." The noise died away then, replaced by the wind, a handful of creaking piano notes. I was shot in the arm, still half mad with fever, but I knew what was coming right enough. there would be no trial, only a march onto the parade ground and a deserter's death of a bullet in the back of the skull. He took a sip, slow this time. Heard the general arrive at the gates. Sure enough, there come voices, a commotion outside my cell, and I thought it were the end. But then the door opened, and there she was. I will not forget that sight, even when I have forgot my own name. Thomas Josephine. Pistols raised like a benediction, blood drying in spray across her fine face. "Mr. Muir," she said, as was her way, "please forgive my blindness and ignorance. There is much I would say. Can you walk at all?" Well, it was all I could do to stand from the shock. I do not know how, but she'd freed my fellow inmate, a Santee from across the plain, and it were he who helped me to the horses. Rattle was there, and a bay mare I reckoned to be Carthy's mount. "Mr. Muir," she told me, once I was mounted, "I shall need you to take the reins. It will pain you, but you must hold Rattle firm, if only for a minute." What else could I do? She clambered up behind me, as she had done when I'd taken her from the plain. I said that she must ride in front to be safe, that she was my insurance no longer. "Not insurance, Abe," she told me. "Protection." "May I never drink again if I lie." We rode straight through the company of 100 men toward the gate, the sister firing all the way. I glanced back and got one look at how they must have seen her. Halo of gun smoke, eyes steely as the new moon, blood like a bitter promise across her cheek. Muir fell silent. The piano had ceased its trundle of weary notes. Several moments passed before one of the men remembered to clear his throat, and even then his voice was rusty. "No." Muir spun the glass in a circle. "She left me at an Indian camp south of Medicine Bow. They wanted her to stay and all, on account of the warrior she saved, but she told them she had business, and penance to make beside. She took Rattle and she kept the pistols. Last I heard, she was headed for Sacramento." The youngest man slurred. A raucous burst of laughter was strangled mid-flow when the speaker found a revolver levelled at his temple. "She is a nun, you filth, and a bride of Christ. Last man who thought otherwise lost a hand, and it weren't me who pulled the trigger."
"Easy,"
chuckled the barman as he stood, pulling one of the other men with him.
"You ain't have to have my time to charge,"
said one man, jamming his hat on his head. "I do not rightly know, Sam," said Muir, stowing his winnings. "But I got a quart of liquor, a fine knife, and a warrant behind me. I've a mind to head west."
Thank you, Stark, and her glamorous assistants there. We're just going to take a quick 10-minute break for you to fill your glasses, and then we'll come back, and then we'll have a bit of a Q&A.
Bristol Con Fringe is a monthly reading series produced by the Bristol Con Foundation. Our thanks to the Shakespeare Tavern for providing us with a venue. The music at the beginning of this podcast is The Future by Chevy 174.